Arts Connection, the intersection of faith and the arts in Canadian culture, with your host, Robert White. Now, here's Robert.
Welcome to Arts Connection for Monday, November 18th, 2013. Well, Advent will be upon us before we know it, and tonight's guest has written a book that will give you a different perspective on the Christmas story. Susan Fish's Seeker of Stars looks at the story of the Magi from the viewpoint of one of those who traveled to Bethlehem guided by the Star of Christmas. Susan's on the phone with me tonight from her home office to talk about the re-release of Seeker of Stars in both print and ebook editions. But before we get to our interview, let's listen to People Look East from Glenn Soderholm's Do Not Be Afraid CD.
People look east, the time is near, of the crown and of the year. Make your house fair as you are able. Trim the hearth and set the table. People look east and sing today. Love the guest is on the way.
And now to our interview with Susan Fish. Good evening, Susan.
Hi there, Robert. How are you?
Not bad. Now, listen, it's been a while since we've talked on Arts Connection, so let's go back and do a refresher for some of the listeners who may not have heard us talking before. When did your, and go back to the beginning and now, when did your interest in writing begin?
Oh, when I was in grade three, I would say is when my interest began. I had a teacher who was willing to publish our stories and put them in the school library. And I got writing a story that I didn't want to put down, and then I was thrilled to have it go through the whole publication process, as it were. And I think I returned to it once my daughter was born in 2001. There was a, well, this story that we're talking about today is one that captivated my imagination again and got me writing fiction again.
So in looking at it, who were some of your early influences?
Well, I can look at a couple of teachers, but I also think in terms of writing, Lucy Maud Montgomery would be one, and I'm also thinking Louisa May Alcott is another. So stories about girls, I think, stories that I could identify with that took me to a slightly different place. Madeleine L'Engle was a writer who I appreciated both for her young adult writing and then also for her Christian writing, too, and to be able to see that a person of faith could write about faith, I think was a big influence for me. And then I think the next person was not a writer, but was a friend and neighbor of mine who was a visual artist, Sheila Caro. And she was a person who helped me see how to write, how to balance writing with life, and how to think about. Well, I remember being stuck in my writing, and she said, "Well, then write about being stuck. That's your material right now." And so she was somebody who helped me really see how to do it.
Well, and through that, you ended up becoming a professional writer. You've written in the area of public relations and media relations. You've written fiction. Is there one you prefer over the other?
There is, and it's interesting because I, in between the sort of grade three period of time and writing fiction, I was writing all the time, but I was writing professionally. So I was writing for nonprofits and charities. I was writing advertising copy and public relations copy. Did some articles. But for me, when I think of writing, I think of fiction, and that's my love, my vocation. I think anyone who could write, why wouldn't they write fiction? And I know. That's not necessarily true, but that's how I think.
Well, and then you also got into the whole editing aspect in that, and you're actually helping other writers hone their works. So I think in your website said something to the effect that you can actually start to see what the other writers are trying to do and get into their heads and help them understand where they should go. How did you get started in that whole area of the craft?
Well, I think there were sort of two strands to it. One was that was part of my work in working for nonprofit organizations. I would help the president take a speech and make it sound more like him. So I would have some talking points and then make that into a full speech and listen to sort of the way he spoke and that sort of thing. So that was one part. Was I learned how to get inside someone else's head with a lot of integrity, I think, and working hard to capture someone's voice and capture their message. The other thing was, as I began writing fiction, I have been part of a writer's group for the last 7 or 8 years and also attended writing conferences where we edited one another's work. And I started realizing that I loved that as well, not only figuring out what I wanted to say in my own writing, but helping someone else figure that out, asking those questions and helping them to sound more like themselves or to achieve more of what they were attempting to do. And sometimes it does take an outside set of eyes to be able to see beyond what you think is on the page to say, well, no, you haven't communicated that clearly, and I didn't get this here, or oh, you meant that, and that kind of thing. So I think those were the two parts that led me towards editing.
Now, writers can be kind of sensitive when you're starting to deal with their works and that, and even those of us who've been on the road for you know a number of years and that. What are the challenges that you face when you're working with someone and trying to help them see how they can better the words that they've already put down that they may be so attached to?
I think the fact that I sit on both sides of the table, it really helps me be more sensitive. I think that as a writer, I know what it feels like to receive that kind of feedback, and so I think I think that it can't help but influence how I give that feedback. But I think the other thing that I've noticed on both sides of the table, again, is there are two ways someone can edit. And in one way, a friend of mine says, well, this is a lovely biography of Sir Johnny MacDonald that you're writing, but there just aren't enough werewolves in it. And I think when an editor brings their own agenda to the table, suggesting that something should be there that isn't there, I think that's what really is a hard kind of editing to take. But I think if what I'm saying is helps you accomplish more of what you are doing, then I'm an advocate. Then I'm alongside you, helping you do what you're already doing. And so no biography of Sir Johnny MacDonald should have werewolves in it, or few should have that. But I think that is something that really helps in terms of that sensitivity. And I have found most of my clients and friends do respond according to that if they know I'm trying to help them do what they're doing better, and that I'm coming alongside them. People tend to respond better even to criticism that could even be harder criticism.
When you're doing that and when you're taking a look at all of that, you're not working with your own words. And there's sort of an emotion attached to when we finally see our own words in print and out there. What kind of brings you joy or an emotional response when you're doing the editing aspect of this?
I don't know. It's a really I don't think it would be joy so much as satisfaction. I think it's satisfying, almost in the way that a puzzle is satisfying, to be able to find the right piece to fit into place. I think that's the satisfaction. I think some of the people that I've edited have been published now, and there's sort of almost a parental sense of pride. I think that's the other thing is there's that. And I guess the other emotion that I have, it's not joy, but I love working with a wide variety of clients because each of us has something that fascinates us that we choose to write about. And they're so different. They're so fascinatingly different. And so I love getting inside someone's writing and finding out what excites them and what they are passionate about. And so I think for me that's actually one of the most satisfying parts of what I do is finding out what you're fascinated about or what another client is fascinated about and helping you to do that better. I think I would describe it as satisfaction.
Okay. Well, what we're going to do right now is we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with author Susan Fish. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station. Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to Sojourn of the Kings from Trevor Dick's Glory and Peace CD collection. I'm your host, Robert White, and we're going to continue our conversation with Susan Fish. Now, Susan, without giving too much away, because I know there are a couple of little twists and turns in there, can you give us an idea what the plot of Seeker of Stars is?
Yes, I can. I describe it as a memoir of one of the Magi. And so that may give some of it away, but it is a story about the wise men and really imagines why someone would go off in search of a star and what happens when he does, how that journey affects his life journey, and how it affects following a star and seeking after a star, how that might make someone who is not a person of faith go on a bit of a journey of faith.
Now, where did the whole idea behind the book come from? And you've got like in the intro you allude to sort of where this started and you talked about earlier in the program about it. But where did this whole thing start for you?
Oh, it started. I was asked by we were attending a church at that time that did dramas at Christmas, and I was asked early in the year, whether I would be willing to write a series of dramas for each Sunday leading up to Christmas, from the perspective of Mary, Joseph, the wise men and the shepherds. And I thought, I had young kids at that point, and I thought, okay, I get Mary and Joseph, and actually even get the shepherds, but I thought, the wise men, how do I get into that? I have no idea. And so I went away in the summer on a personal retreat, and I thought, I'm going to use a little bit of this time to think about this. And I often find with a story you can have an idea, but it's almost like, I describe it as being a bit like walking around a swimming pool, and you have to decide at a certain point and place to plunge in. And all of a sudden I started thinking about what would make someone do this to become a wise man. How could that actually happen? And I pictured a little boy fascinated by stars, and that was my way in. So I only intended on this retreat to just do a little bit of thinking, but I ended up spending hours and hours writing, and I looked up, I don't know, 20 or 30 pages in to realize that about 6 hours had passed and my family was arriving to pick me up, and that what I was writing might not end up being a church drama. So I did end up writing a shorter version of it for the church that year, but it became a book that took me over a year to actually write.
Well, I'm looking at that, and there's some fascinating detail in there. You talk about the process of weaving. You get into astronomy. How did you do? What kind of research did you do for the novel to try and get that much detail in there?
Well, it was interesting. I researched second, not first, and I was thinking that was a fault. And then I talked with a friend of mine who's a professor, and he said, no, you do it that way. You always do it that way. Not necessarily with academic stuff, but with writing, you want to capture the story and not let the historical details bog you down. And so, for instance, I had my characters drinking coffee at one point, and I found out later that at that point, coffee in that part of the world would not have been a beverage. So they went over to wine at that point. A lot of my research at that point came from books from the library and from websites in terms of astronomy. But in a big part of it, the book is set on a journey through the desert. And I've never been to a desert other than the Badlands of Alberta. And so I actually had black and white pictures from an old book that I got at the public library. And I worked hard just to sort of think, what would it smell like? What would it taste like? What would this be like? And people who've been to this area of the world say to me, yeah, you know, you got it. So I think it's a combination of using historical sources and then also imagination to fully flesh that out.
Well, what I find fascinating too is you actually released Secret of Stars in 2005. It's now being re-released by David C. Cook, both in print and in ebook editions. Sort of go on that journey for us. How did it go from, you know, initially, you know, the initial printing to now being picked up by a royalty publisher?
Well, first of all, I will say for any writers out there that it got rejected probably 20 times before I found a publisher in the first place. And a small Canadian publisher in the Ottawa area published the book in 2005, and I think we printed 2,000 or 2,500 copies they did. And they got all sorts of publicity out there. The book got out. I did all sorts of public speaking at that point. And then that publisher didn't get a renewal of their grant money. And they, as so many small publishers in Canada do, had to fold. And so at that point, all the rights of the book reverted to me. And I had a literary agent at that point who said to me, when a book has a Christmas theme to it, it's the kind of book that people like to take out year after year. It's not something that is popular now and then a couple years from now it's done with. He said it's a book that would have legs to it. So he said, I wouldn't give up on this. I would continue to promote it, to look for other publishers for it.
I have a friend who's a musician, and they say the same thing about Christmas CDs.
Well, I think we know that as readers and listeners, too. You know that you pull out your Christmas music and it feels fresh because you haven't listened to it in 10 or 11 months. So that resonated with me. But for a few years, I was writing other books, and so I wasn't actually looking for a publisher for this one again. And every year I would bring out copies of it, and I would sell it through local bookstores. There was a publisher, a distribution center in Winnipeg that had several hundred copies and I think sold 30 copies of it over the last 7 or 8 years. But my agent had gone to work for Cook in the last few years, and Cook had launched a new program that this book is part of, and it's a digital-first program. And he said, you know, I want this book for this because I think this is a book that people will really like. And so they contacted me earlier this year and said, would you be willing for this to happen? I said, absolutely. I would love for this book to get out to a wider audience. And so that's where things have happened with this. So it will be published both in hard copy and in digital copies. But the difference with this, and this is where they can publish more books and take more risk with books, I suppose, is that they aren't printing thousands of copies and sending them out to Chapters and Borders and all the different kinds of bookstores. Books are printed and sold on demand. So if you want to buy 5 copies for Christmas presents for people, for teachers, or for your family, you can order them online, and then they will print them and deliver them. So it's using new forms of technology. Or if you want to read it as an e-book on your computer or on an e-reader, you can download it instantly.
So when you're doing that, when you're looking at that, I mean, that's a totally different model from what a lot of authors and readers are used to, where the print comes out first, and then later on in the new world, you know, maybe a digital version would come out. What have you learned about both the writing process and the publishing process along the way with this journey that it's now taken you?
Oh, do you have an hour?
I guess no, we got about we got a couple of minutes.
I've learned
a lot.
I think one of the things that I've learned is that there has to be a really good match between the publisher and the writer. I think that's one thing that I've learned about the publishing process. It's a tough business. It's tough. I've known for years that it's tough from the writer's side, because there's a lot of rejection involved, and there's a lot of time waiting, and a lot of time worrying and being discouraged, I think. But I think from the publisher's side too, things are difficult, and ebooks are both a solution. They're both the solution and the problem in some ways, because it makes things both easier to distribute and more difficult for publishers. And so I think I have more sympathy for the publishers at this point than I did at one point. And that's one thing that I have learned. And as I say, from the writing side, I think the recognition that this is a business, like anything else, that readers have to be willing to invest, and that a lot of money goes to overhead. And so to recognize that rejection isn't necessarily, well, it certainly isn't personal, and it, even though it feels like it at times when you're sending out something that's really, you've invested your life and your heart into, but it's not personal. But it sometimes just means it's not an absolutely perfect fit. So I've learned to actually send out manuscripts to publishers where I think it is a perfect fit, not just please pick me, that kind of thing. So those are things I've learned along the way.
Okay, well, we have to take one final break, and when we come back, we'll wrap up our conversation with Susan Fish, author of Seeker of Stars. I'm your host, Robert White, and you're listening to Arts Connection on Faith FM, your inspiration station.
Follow the star to a place unexpected. Would you believe after all we've projected? A child in a lonely and small, the weakest of all, unlikeliest hero, wrapped in his mother's shawl, just a child. Is this who we've waited for? 'Cause how many kings stepped down from their thrones? How many lords have abandoned their homes? How many greats have become the torn all apart?
Welcome back to Arts Connection. You've been listening to How Many Kings, the title track of Down Here's Christmas CD, How Many Kings. I'm your host, Robert White. We're going to finish up our conversation with Susan Fish. Susan, what's next on your agenda?
Well, I have a book that I'm really excited about and that I finished writing. And so, first of all, I'm in the process of promoting Seeker of Stars as it comes out again. So I'll go back from the book that I'm excited about to this book that I'm also excited about. We're doing some giveaways of the book on my blog and on the Cook website as well, and on Goodreads. So I'm promoting it, I'm talking about it with people, particularly in the U.S. But this other book that I've written, I'm looking for a publishing home for, and we talked earlier about new forms of opportunities with publishing, and another new opportunity is self-publishing. And so I'm right now waiting to hear back from several publishers. But it's a book I'm excited enough about, and I'm eager to see out in the world. And so if the book doesn't get picked up, I'm actually likely to self-publish it in the next year. So that's something. And then my company, Storywell, where I'm editing, we're organizing writing workshops in Waterloo, and I'm working with a variety of clients. So it keeps me busy.
Well, if people are interested in getting a copy of Seeker of Stars, how can they do this once it's out in the general public?
The website is dccebook.com, and that is the David C. Cook ebook, .com, and they can Google Seeker of Stars, or they can find my blog, which is dccebook.com, and those things will link to
where
people can order it. They can also order the book directly as an ebook or as a
print
book through Amazon. That's the best way to order it.
Well, Susan, thank you very much for your time tonight.
You're welcome. Nice to
talk to you. And thank you for listening to Arts Connection today. Thank you to my guest, Susan Fish. And if you miss a broadcast or want to hear it again, look for the archive programs on our website at www.ceylonministries.ca. And be sure to tune in next week for another look at where faith, arts, and Canadian culture meet. Follow us on Twitter at Selaw13, S-E-L-A-W-13. For Arts Connection, I'm your host, Robert White, saying good day and God bless.
You've been listening to Arts Connection, a production of Selaw Ministries. Be sure to tune in again next Thursday evening at 10, right here on Faith FM.